Today is March 8th, 2017, and this is episode number 401 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a bouncy, flouncy roux. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at ACM@macobserver.com.
I couldn't figure out how to spell bouncy, flouncy roux. So on your business card, it's going to say marsupial about town.
I wish I'd said that. That is so much better than my title. That is so good. The other voice you hear laughing or giggling with Bob, you never know, is Bob Dr. Mac Levitas.
Marsupials. Gotta love it. You never know what you'll hear on this show.
We don't know what we'll hear on this show. Really, Bob, we're just along for the ride.
Well, Bob has been part of the pre-show, so he knows that for a fact.
Yeah.
He's seen it in action. But Bob is here joining us today plug his new book.
We should let him plug it, but before he plugs it, yeah. I just want to tell everyone that Blue Apron's our sponsor today.
Oh, yeah, right. Those guys, this is fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. So we're going to plug them after Bob plugs his new book.
All right. Plug away.
Oh, well, yes. My new book is Working Smarter for Mac Users. It's how to do more work in less time so you have more time for the things you love.
Clearly a book Brian and I both need to read for this
show. Well, Brian edited it.
So yeah, full disclosure.
I think he's read it.
I edited this book.
At least I hope he read it.
I love this book. Before you can even start plugging, I'm going to tell you, Bob, the reason why I love it is this. I've read a lot of the various productivity and self-help productivity systems that are out there, and none of them ever worked for me. And I mean, they just didn't stay. I didn't click with them. They did the things that they were telling me to do were not things that worked with my brain. And one of the things that really bothered me about them is that every one of them talks about what I, in the write-up I did for your book, I called it the one true way of doing things, right? They're all like, you know, they all say, these are the exact things that you have to do to be productive.
Right. Do this all your troubles will go away.
And what that really should be is do this and all your troubles will go away if you're me, the author.
Right.
And what you did instead, in addition to, like, you know, you pulled all these great Mac tips, you pulled together all these various techniques that you have personally learned over the decades of beating your own procrastination issues, but you presented the problem, talked about multiple ways of solving that problem, and then encouraged us to find the one that works for us instead of telling us the one true way of doing things.
Well, there is no one true. You hit the nail on the head. One of the reasons I was so dissatisfied with everything I had read was everybody had a different one true thing, and none of them was the one true thing. And so, you know, part of what I tried to do, really, really, I'm glad that you said that, Brian, because one of the things I was trying to get across in this book is I'm going to give you a lot of tools. Some of them I use today. Some of them I've used in the past. Some of them I used a little, and it wasn't for me, but it might be for you. And the thing is, I included all of those. The ones I used, the ones I used to use, the ones I've tried and didn't appeal to me, but still had redeeming quality. And you can take all of these. It's like, you know, one from column A and one from column B and one from column C. And if you go through the book and you pick out the parts that you think might work for you, you can put together the program that's just right for you, the one perfect program for you.
So it's for like animals for productivity.
But that's the next book, Garanimals for Productivity.
Put another way. Your part of what this book does is teach us how to think about procrastination, how to think about the things that those of us who procrastinate do to keep us from being productive? Instead of doing this one true way thing, this book is teaching us how to think about these things. And I so appreciate it. Now I need to actually do them. that's of course my challenge, but the content in the book, and this is aside from all the fantastic Mac productivity. How many editing notes did I end up giving you where I said, I didn't know this. Like, those, this is a new one
favorites.
For me.
Those were that my was like, favorites. Like, and there were a 20, dozen or more, 20 maybe.
Can you remember any of them off the top of your head? Because I'm curious which things you dropped in Brian's lap where he's like, wow, I didn't know that.
Unsubscribing from email lists that you don't want.
Oh yeah, that's an awesome
right.
Awesome
how about Jeff? In the last 2 months, 3 months, how many times have you heard me say that my email is out of control?
Often enough that I've stopped counting.
Right, and I'm sitting reading that chapter. Was that in a chapter dedicated to email, Bob?
Yes, chapter 5. Control your email. Don't let it control you.
Yeah, and I get to that, and it's like we get subscribed to so many lists. Our various email addresses at the Mac Observer get subscribed to so many lists, and. This is one of those things that I had known, but I just completely forgot about. And here I am every day deleting the same emails that I don't care about and I'm not going to read day after day after day after day. And then Bob's telling me, well, unsubscribe to that crap.
It's like, here, oh, see, yeah. That little link? Just click that
thing. Do a little
thing.
Every day. Yeah, do a little every day, and in a couple of weeks, you'll be surprised. It makes a difference.
Now, it's already made a huge difference to me, Bob. I love you to death just for that.
Now, some people might be kind of baffled, thinking, no, why would you click those links in the emails? That's not what you're talking about. This is actually a feature in Mail where it will unsubscribe you from these lists.
Yes, but you can do either way. It depends whose list it is. I mean, if you see at the bottom that it's a MailChimp list or something, the link is probably the best way to do it. But a lot of them obfuscate what happens when you click the unsubscribe link, or they make you type your email address and you go, oh crap, which one? Right?
Mm-hmm.
I have like 11 email addresses. How do I know which one I want to unsubscribe from? In which case, actually, I subscribe to something called SaneBox. It's about, I think, 75 or 80 bucks a year. Like, what's that? $8 a month? And it has something that I love. It's called the Sane Black Hole. And if you put something in there, you'll never see mail from that sender again. And it doesn't depend on their server or their unsubscribe link working or anything else. It just
You mean
doesn't.
Third party. It depends on SaneBox. SaneBox is taking care of that for you.
SaneBox does it. You don't have to unsubscribe. You just throw stuff in your black hole box, and you'll never see anything from that person.
Dave Hamilton pitched SaneBox a long time ago, and you know, I was like, yeah, I should probably do something like that, and I never bothered. But reading through your description of SaneBox and how you use it, Bob, makes me realize that I made a mistake by not having already done it.
Well, and the other thing that SaneBox brings to the party that's so awesome is you can defer email by sending it to yourself in the future. So if you get something and you say, yeah, I got to do this, but not until Friday, you can send it to friday@sanebox.com. It'll come back on Friday. So it turns your mailbox into a
TARDIS.
Into a living to-do list, which is, you know, pretty useful.
By the way, Jeff gets points for
TARDIS.
TARDIS there, yeah. Just so you know.
Thanks.
For working it into conversation?
Yeah, in a legit way. So is there, can you think of another thing that surprised you, Brian?
No, because I didn't, we don't do homework.
Right. Well, and I'm just totally springing this on you.
Yeah. Well, I'm the one who mentioned it in the first place. So I'm actually looking, I have all my notes.
What they were. You have the versions that have the notes in them. Mine have them stripped out now.
Yeah, and the problem is, though, it's by chapter, so I don't have a single document where I can actually go and look. But there were several of the Mac productivity tips in particular were the ones where I was like, this is new to me. This does that. And that's where I started thinking, like, Bob, I want to rip you off. I want to make some of these tips.
Well, what we're going to do, I thought, was we're going to turn some of those into TMO mini tips or something, because you are welcome to the contents of my book to do with what you will on TMO. You know, I'm more than happy to have you speak it out.
We've got that recorded now, Brian.
It's true. We totally do.
You guys are totally welcome to it.
Oh, that's right. So while I'm scrolling through notes, because, you know, that's how my brain works, tell us more about the book, Bob.
Okay, the book, I look at productivity as kind of having three legs. There's a picture in one of the early chapters of a three-legged stool. And if you take one of the legs away, what you've got is firewood. You know, it's no longer a piece of furniture or capable of supporting somebody or anything. So I kind of looked at three different things. The first is productivity, which is doing things better, faster, or more elegantly. So that is all of the things that you already do, figuring out the easiest way to do them if you do them repetitively. In other words, if it's something you do all the time, figure out a way to do it with the least amount of effort every time you do it. Good example of this is snippets, text snippets.
Mm-hmm.
So I use Text Expander, but, you know, there's lots of ways you can go with this. The key is to know about snippets and expanding little abbreviations into lots of words. And then once you know that, well, I can't tell you how much time it saves me every day having things like my book title, my email address, and other things available in a way that I don't have to type them or spend any time copying and pasting them. They just appear in my document magically. So snippets are, you know, they're a good example of better, faster, more elegantly. That's the first section of the book.
Mm-hmm.
The middle section of the book addresses planning. I feel that if you want to really be productive, you can't leave to chance what you're going to do today. You need to think through and evaluate all the things that need doing, and then call out the things that are the most important for today and make sure that they get done. And so, you know, the second part talks about being organized, mm-hmm. you know, knowing where you are in a project, setting quotas for yourself if it's a project that's got multiple components over a long period of time. Know what your milestones are so that you don't get to the halfway point on the calendar and realize you've only got 5% of the project done. So quotas are a big thing for being organized. And then the whole last part of the book deals with procrastination and falling down rabbit holes. And it's especially Brian loved that section. He said,
I did.
He said, this is what you really wanted to write, isn't it? And he's right. That was the part that was the easiest for me to write and the most fun, and I think is the most useful, because I'm the world's greatest procrastinator, and I've been fighting this for 30 years. And the thing I've learned is, if you know that you do it, that's half the battle right there. If you can just acknowledge the fact that you get distracted and end up losing time down rabbit holes, just knowing that is half the battle. Then you can figure out how you can work around it. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, I used to work until midnight almost every night because I didn't finish all my work during the day. Today, I never work past dinner time. I mean, rarely do I find that I didn't accomplish everything that needed doing today by 5 or 6 o'clock at night. So I've cut a 5-6 hours off of my work days just by being organized and by not allowing myself to be distracted by shiny things until I'm ready to be distracted by shiny things, which is usually after 5 or 6 o'clock. Right?
That's significant. I mean, being able to cut 5 or 6 hours off your work day.
Well, I took a very honest look at myself, and if you read the book, I described the original work days, and they were things like, you know, played Crystal Quest for 2 hours while I tried to think, but nothing happened. You know, okay, that, I was in my chair at my desk. I was working. And that was how I ran my life. It's like, you know, something shiny came along. I could lose half a day, but I still had 6 pages due the next morning. And you got to prioritize. You know, it's just really important to figure out what's important and get that done. And one of my tricks is I do my most important stuff in the morning. So, mm-hmm. A, if it ends up taking longer than I thought, I'm not up against the wall, you know, pulling an all-nighter to get it done. And B, I feel fresher in the morning and more creative and more on top of things. By 3 in the afternoon, 4 in the afternoon, I'm not as sharp. And so the important stuff, if I can get it done before lunchtime or before, you know, early afternoon, then the rest of the day's gravy. I don't need to be totally sharp to, like, go through my email at the end of the day, or
well, and you have SaneBox helping with that anyhow.
Correctamundo, or, you know, to go shopping or do any of the things that would ordinarily be a rabbit hole for me. You know, I leave them for the end of the day when I'm not sharp anymore. And then, you know, it doesn't matter. I already did all the important stuff. If I end up on Amazon looking at drones for 20 minutes, so be it. That's one of my rabbit holes. I want a drone. I have no reason, no use for it, no real, I can't justify it at all, but I want one.
So, Baba, I have some news for you. Mm-hmm. You are the poster child for ADHD. I don't know if you know that. Yes.
My shrink told me that. He evaluated me.
Well, a lot of the reason why you needed to come up with these techniques for beating your procrastination is because you do suffer from ADHD. But the thing is, the techniques that you talk about, like all the Mac tips, for instance, I mean, those are for everybody. Right. Every Mac user should read through your Mac tips. Like take 3 of the jillions that you give us. Take 3 and adopt them into your workflow, and you're gonna you know, get back minutes every day. But for a lot of the stuff that you talk about in the book about specifically overcoming your rabbit holes and stuff, while they stem from your own ADHD, I think that they apply to a lot of us, especially in today's distracted, always connected world.
My observation from the, you know, double handfuls of people that have read the book so far and who have read stuff I've written about it is that you're absolutely right. The rabbit hole thing resonates with almost everybody that I talk to it about. I wrote a blog post about what are your rabbit holes, and it, I think, got the most response of any blog post I've, you know, I've had the blog a year, and I think that one got the most feedback and conversation going. So I think a lot of people have the rabbit hole thing going on where,
yeah, well, it's so easy.
Something can distract them for a half hour, an hour. And today, more than ever, because you're sitting at your computer, it's only one window away. You know, it's not like you have to go anywhere or do anything. You move your fingers about a quarter of an inch, and you've just fallen down the rabbit hole.
Yep.
So I think you need to be, you know, I think everybody that I've talked to tells me that it happens to them. And what I love is everybody's rabbit hole is different. You know, some people it's cat videos, some people it's drone ads, and some people it's drone videos. but... You know, and some people it's eBay, and some people it's Craigslist, and, you know, whatever it is, once you identify it and realize that it's stealing minutes from your life sometimes, then you can figure out, you know, how to
manage that,
how to get along with it. Yeah. How to get along, because I don't want to say I'm not going to do that anymore. I just want to say I'm not going to do that when I have important things to do. And that's half the battle.
Reading through all of my editing notes here, I keep some really good editing notes.
And I implemented all of them.
Really did. I know you did.
You did a great job.
Man, thank you. You did a good job. Man, I love this book. I honestly love this book. I love this book. This book was, I need to actually read it as a reader. Like all of my readings, my multiple readings of this book have all been as an editor, and I need to sit down and read it as a reader and actually do these things, because I like so much of it absolutely applies to my workflow every day. So many of the rabbit hole issues, so many of the tips would be so useful to me if I actually did them. And I don't know, it's good stuff. Obviously, I'm biased. I was involved in the production of this book, but I love it. And I'm so happy to see that it's out there. And I hope that our listeners go and check it out.
So where can people find it?
Well, if you go to workingsmarterformacusers.com, you can order it from there. Amazon has it. iBooks will have it, but it hasn't been, I don't know what they call it, approved yet. It's in the system, but it's not visible yet. Clearly, so I'm waiting for them to tell me it's released. Maybe. It could just be that they're overwhelmed with volume. I don't know.
Well, a perfect reason to read your book. Then they could.
On the other hand, it's already approved by Amazon, and you can buy the Kindle version today. So I don't know. Pretty soon for iBooks.
Yeah, well, as many issues as our listeners have heard us talk about Amazon, Amazon has done an infinitely better job of providing a platform to authors.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I don't think
what I'm doing would be possible if Amazon hadn't come along. You know, I don't think that you could make you could justify doing what I'm doing without an Amazon.
Yeah, it's true for good. Yeah. And one last thing, right. If our listeners are going to buy the book and go and review it on iTunes or on Amazon, those reviews matter. Even if it's a bad review, if you hate the book, review it.
Yeah,
that actually helps other people understand the book better.
Yeah, just as long as you're clear about why you hated it, then go, please write the review. It'll help other people make a purchase decision. But I don't think you'll hate it. I think you'll like it.
I think so, too.
So, you know where to go. WorkingSmarterForMacUsers.com. Isn't that a great URL? It's very hard to forget once you...
It is. However, Bob, we've got to move on. So, I'm going to kick you out of this, out of the show. We appreciate you being
mic,
here and telling us about it.
They're turning my mic off. They're turning my mic off.
Yeah. We're going to Bob Levitis you.
All right. That's it. I'm out of here.
Thanks for having me. Love to Sean Cassidy.
Oh,
thanks, Bob.
I'm going to leave before you start with that. Bye, guys. Thank you for having me. Bye.
Thanks for coming on. You rock.
Take care.
Yeah. Thanks, man. All right.
Nothing like kicking your guests off the show.
I know, nothing, right? That's a first. It was kind of fun.
Yeah. See ya. We're classy like that.
He had a meeting. Otherwise, we would have had him on for the whole show.
You know, had you not said that, people would have gone through the rest of the day thinking that we're jerks.
Yeah, fair enough. And to be fair, you know.
To be fair, yeah, I know.
Hashtag Jeff and Brian. Let's see here. So Blue Apron. BlueApron.com is sponsoring us.
Which is really awesome.
It is, in fact, really awesome. What these folks do is develop recipes, send you those recipes, along with the food to make them.
Yeah. Fresh food. Quality ingredients in a box on your doorstep.
Yeah.
Or right in your arms if your delivery person is cool like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. I guess kind of, depends on whether or not you're. There's a lot of things that might depend on. But I love this stuff. I've learned a lot about cooking, I love the recipes. And I love the food.
I love the diversity in what they're coming up with. So many things that I wouldn't have thought to try otherwise.
Yeah. Oh, likewise. Oh my god. Yeah, my goodness. I've learned how to cook several dishes from my Blue Apron deliveries, and I've learned about managing my managing that cooking process for an involved meal too, because they, right. they lay this stuff out step by step. It's I think Dave put it. It's like a how to. It's a how to cook.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the recipe. It's a how to cook it. It's about how to use that recipe.
And that how-to is designed so well, I've never had any trouble with it. Now, the reason I say that is because I live at higher altitude. So a lot of times when I'm cooking things, I have to kind of on the fly figure out what to change to accommodate higher altitude.
Sure.
Never have had a problem with anything from Blue Apron. It's food that just works.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And like coming up, we have, for instance, pork and cabbage tacos, miso butter chicken. What? I've never cooked that. That's crazy.
Wait, you had me at pork and cabbage tacos.
Pork and cabbage tacos with pineapple and pickled jalapeno salsa. They're going to show me how to make that. They're going to send me this stuff to make it, and they're going to show me how to do it. Pork and cabbage tacos, man, that sounds so good. Here's the thing. These folks are sponsoring us. Mm-hmm. And because they're sponsoring us, you get the opportunity to try this stuff at a discount. They'll give you three meals from your first order for free.
And free shipping. So this sounds like too good to be true, but I know it is true. So where do people go to find this, Brian?
They go to blueapron.com/ACM.
Awesome. And then they just pick out the meals they want from the offerings.
Right. It gives you three meals. It defaults to three meals, but there's actually six you could choose from. So you can change those out if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And wait and get your food. it's great.
Yeah, and then make dinner.
And then make dinner.
Have a friend over or a special someone and make dinner with them. It's really awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Or you know, if you're married, you can go ahead. You can invite your spouse.
Oh, sure. I suppose
they'll send you. They have meal plans for four people too. If you're cooking for a family,
that's true.
Yeah. So, I mean, this stuff is great. It's blueapron.com/ACM. Go check them out. They're sponsoring us. We'd like you to show them some of the same love that they're showing us.
I think that sounds wonderful. And then you can have good food to show love to another person.
Yeah. Giddy up. Giddy up, giddy up, giddy up. All right. We have this interesting little thing going on.
Oh, boy, howdy. Yeah, you're talking about WikiLeaks and the CIA, aren't you?
Yes, WikiLeaks and the CIA data trove.
Right.
Vault 7, I think they call it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, someone's been watching too many espionage movies. Vault 7. Anyhow, the short-ish version is that WikiLeaks released a couple thousand pages of documents that
7,818 to be precise.
Oh yeah, okay, that's a lot of pages. So mm-hmm. In these lots and lots of pages, it details how the CIA has acquired and developed various hacking tools so that they can work around the security measures on various electronic devices, ranging from smartphones to smart TVs. And one of the areas that gets targeted a lot is the iPhone. So, of course, even if the rest of it hadn't already caught our attention, the iPhone thing would. So, yeah, so there were several hacks that CIA has so they can work around encryption and they can even work around encryption in apps like WhatsApp and Signal. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. Well, now, First of all, this information has some kind of a sell-by date on it. We don't know what that sell-by date necessarily is.
Yeah. Well,
for instance, if all of these documents are 3 years, this is not the case. But if all of these documents were 3 years old, one could assume that the information may not be up to date. Now, that's not the case. We don't know exactly how old they are, but Apple has specifically said that it has patched most of the disclosed vulnerabilities.
Right. And it's working on the others right now.
And it shouldn't be news that the CIA has these tools. The NSA, the National Security Agency, also has an arsenal of tools for cracking iPhones and every other device on the planet.
Right.
That wasn't involved in this particular data trove, but these are things that have been known, and the CIA and the NSA both have come out in favor of devices being encrypted, which would essentially protect them from the CIA and the NSA. But they're saying they have come out and said it, not related to this document leak, but they have come out and said that our national security is enhanced by having end-to-end encryption.
Mm-hmm.
Because the same thing that protects devices from the CIA and the NSA also protects those devices and information from, say, the Chinese and the Russians and criminal organizations.
Right.
Right. And we have the most secrets to give up, making it in our best interest to protect those secrets. I'm speaking from the CIA and the NSA's theoretical viewpoint.
Right. So that is interesting that they are strong advocates for encryption and at the same time are working so hard to find ways to hack through that encryption.
Right. And that is an issue. Like, so one, it's the CIA's business to steal secrets. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, that's what the CIA does.
I think they prefer now, covertly acquire.
Tomato, tomato, of course.
Of course.
And it is the NSA's job to not only steal secrets, but also to protect the United States data, information, to protect our secrets, too. Right? The CIA is involved in espionage outside of the country. The CIA is actually prohibited by law from operating within the borders of the United States, whereas the NSA is not.
Right. NSA, FBI can work inside the United States. CIA works outside the United States.
Outside of the United States. And where... So what am I trying to say here? The NSA, part of the NSA's charter is to help protect us. It's not just to surveil, right? It's the NSA that was surveilling through doing all the mass surveillance stuff related to the Patriot Act, the things that Jeff and I have spoken out against on multiple occasions.
Mm-hmm.
We don't believe in mass surveillance, and we don't. I mean, that's no way
it's
to protect freedom.
Uncool.
It is extremely uncool. The CIA is not tasked with protecting our data, right? They are only tasked with acquiring data. To that end, what I'm trying to get to is the notion of zero-day exploits.
Mm-hmm.
And when organizations like the CIA and the NSA find or acquire, i.e. buy, zero-day exploits,
mm-hmm,
that they actually keep them so that they can use them.
Right.
And in my, I, in particular with the NSA, I would much prefer that they uncover these zero day exploits and then help companies like Apple and Microsoft and Google and any other operating system manufacturer, any other app maker, right? Help them plug those holes to keep us safe. I would much rather they do that. The CIA, that's not their job. I mean, I get, I'm, you know, it's like, I wish that they would disclose zero-day exploits too, but I mean, really, they're tasked with ferreting out information, not protecting it.
You know, that's a really good point. It would be cool if there was an agency in the government that was actively working to ensure our privacy and security like that.
Well, the NSA kind of is, kind of.
Yeah, but I mean full directly. Out, not just kind
yes,
of.
Right, right. That right. I agree with that. That would actually be fantastic. And it's probably not going to happen.
I know.
It's probably not going to happen because you've got this friction between law enforcement and national security. You've got this friction between their needs and our wants. Needs. Their needs and wants and our needs and wants. And what we want is privacy. And actually what we need is privacy, not only to protect ourselves from unconstitutional surveillance, but also to more in particular to protect ourselves from foreign surveillance, from foreign spying and from criminal spying all over the world.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really don't want my credit card number in anyone else's hands.
Right. Right. And you know, it turns out that companies need help with that. So to that end, the danger in organizations like the CIA or the NSA having zero-day exploits and keeping them to themselves so that they can use them. Should we explain what a zero-day exploit is?
Yeah, we should. So, okay, so a zero-day exploit is some sort of like a security hack that is out and happening right now. And the device manufacturer has not been able to patch it yet. So like someone finds a new hack that works around some security feature in your iPhone and it's out in the wild. And then Apple, they find it and they're internally saying, oh crap, we have to fix this. That's a zero day exploit.
Well, and yeah, in particular, it's sort of a, like the company has had 0 days to fix it.
Right.
It's known outside of the company. It's known outside of the developer responsible for security. And so a 0 day exploit could be in use for 10 years or, you know, or 50 years. So I mean, that's not possible yet. But anyway, the point is, it's mostly banana. Yeah. The point is that zero days refers to simply the fact that it's an exploit known, unknown to the manufacturer, to the developer.
Yeah.
And these exploits are the ones that are used by criminal organizations and used by intelligence agencies throughout the world to surveil and spy on people. Right. So the danger in organizations like the CIA and the NSA having 0 day exploits that they're keeping secret is that they can leak to it right now.
Right. And that really sucks because once a wider audience knows about these security exploits, that means there are more people that are going to try and take advantage of them. Now, if you're staying on top of your iPhone software updates, then you're mostly safe from these, but Apple still has to roll out at least one more update to address them, maybe more. And
some of them deal with operating systems that are no longer updated.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if you're on an iPhone that can't run anything newer than like iOS 7, iOS 6, and if any of the exploits can target that, well, there's nothing you're going to be able to do for that specific device.
This week on TMO's Daily Observations, we talked about the fact that there are 715 million iPhones out in the wild, and that 64% of all iPhones made over the last 10 years are still in operation.
Yeah, so that some means there's devices, a lot of iPhones out there that can't run iOS 10.
Right, a lot. Tens of millions, if not, you know, 100 or 200 million. Right, it's a lot of devices out there that are subject to some of the exploits that were disclosed in this WikiLeaks leak, and it's concerning. And not only do you have the specific exploits that are disclosed in leaks like this, you also have what hackers can learn from them to develop or find additional zero-day exploits.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Right? So, when the CIA or the NSA finds these things and keeps them to themselves, it's going to backfire
at some point.
It's likely to backfire at some point. It's not a for sure thing that they will be disclosed, but it is a likely thing that will be disclosed. It's just like having a backdoor. If a backdoor exists, it's probably going to get into the hands of someone who shouldn't have it.
Right. And saying, don't worry, these things will never be out in the public, out in the wild. We've seen time and time again, that's not the case. Stuff leaks. Either by design or by accident, stuff leaks.
Right. And when people know that this stuff exists, they go looking for it. Now someone, this was a leak. This was not, I don't think this was a hack, right? Do we know anything specific about where it came from?
I'm assuming this is all from the stuff that WikiLeaks hacked.
No, WikiLeaks didn't hack anything. What do you mean?
Yeah, that people hacked stuff and then gave it to WikiLeaks.
Yeah, but WikiLeaks didn't do the hacking. I'm not a huge fan of what WikiLeaks. I'm not a huge fan. No, of
I didn't
everything
mean to imply they actually did the hacking, but it's stuff people hacked and then gave over to WikiLeaks.
Surely this is some. Is this from a hack?
I'm not sure. I'm speculating here.
CIA lost control of the majority of its hacking arsenal. Files may have access to. Here's Apple's complete statement. Apple is deeply committed to safeguarding evidence. It's a good thing we do our homework, right?
Yeah, well, you know, top men.
I don't know if this was a hack or a leak.
Regardless, it's out there now.
It is out there now.
And and the fact that it's out there just serves as validation for what you've been saying.
What we've been talking about for the last 2 years in particular, the last year in particular, and the last 2 years, really, this has been an ongoing issue.
Yeah.
So, there you have it.
Hey, I want to switch gears and kind of complain for a minute. And it's about the whole smart home thing. So last night, I had to deal with what was a serious catastrophe for me and so many other people. I went to tell my Echo to turn the lights off, and it didn't work. And it turns out...
Oh, that sounds like fun.
It was loads of fun. It didn't work for anything. Every command that I issued... I got a quick flashing blue ring on my Echo Dot and then nothing. And I have to tell you, it's so stupid and at the same time so deeply disturbing when you tell your voice-controlled smart home device to perform a task and it's not able to. And then I had to sit there and like seriously think about how to turn off the lights so that I could still have them function in some way. And yeah.
So at the heart of what you're talking about is the fact that you've become reliant on a service that is itself reliant on internet connectivity, more specifically internet connectivity to home servers.
Yes.
That are actually doing the heavy lifting and the thinking.
Right. So, so in this case, I had an active internet connection. It was on Amazon's end where the servers that, handle the voice commands, those stopped working, or at least they stopped responding. And so for all practical purposes, they stopped working. And it made a point very clear to me that has bounced around in my head, but it hadn't gelled until it became an issue for me. And it's that there's this reliance we have on these devices, and that reliance is based on this very tenuous point, meaning this active internet connection to a server that's working.
Well, and to be fair, I don't want Alexa in my home. I have an Alexa in the home in which I live, but it's because I have roommates. Mm-hmm. And I say one thing and one thing only to that device.
I know.
And that would be, Alexa, go blank yourself. I try to say that at least once a day.
And
because I'm petty like that.
So pamper?
No, not pamper. It's another word altogether, Jeff.
Oh.
Yeah, oh. You can tune into Pop.0 and hear frequent uses of this word.
Yes. We'll have to make sure that there's a link to Pop.0 in the show notes today.
Yeah, we're getting closer to launching that, John Keaton and I, by the way. Very, very much closer to launching that. But by the way, you know, he filled in for you last week. You might not have known that.
I did know that. And you know what?
I
really appreciate that both of you were there. Especially, it was episode 400. I'm sorry I had to miss it.
I know you missed episode 400, brother.
I did.
What the heck is that about?
That's about.
And you moved on my birthday. What the heck is up with that?
I was celebrating your birthday by finding a place that works better.
fair enough. And fortunately, you got moved, and that's a good thing. But my point here is that I don't like Alexa. I don't like the idea of her listening in on my life. What did we learn yesterday? Amazon stopped fighting a subpoena for recordings because the owner of the Alexa device in question
said, go ahead and release the recordings.
Yeah.
So actually, right. I want to dive into that for just a second.
Okay.
And that was like the perfect solution for Amazon. Because it didn't set any precedent. It got them off the hook from having to deal with a potentially lengthy legal fight that could set precedent if this didn't go in the way they wanted.
Well, you know what? It does set precedent, though. It sets a precedent of these recordings being used in an investigation.
Well, that's a precedent that's already been there. And so what's different about this case is that the court orders wouldn't allow Amazon to delete the records from this guy.
Ah.
So they would have been deleted long ago, except for that order. So they've just been sitting there held. And so this case becomes kind of an exception because of that extra order that was in there.
Okay, fair enough. But it's still, I mean, it's not, I'm not personally worried about law enforcement using Alexa recordings from my home in investigation of a crime. Mostly, I say this is so fraught with peril, mostly because I'm not intending on committing any crimes. This is all principle for me. I don't like the idea of having anything in my home being used against me in ways that are utterly beyond my control out of principle. And this not only includes lawful subpoenas from law enforcement, which of course need to be honored. Mm-hmm. Right. Lawful search warrants are an important aspect of our system of justice here in this country, White House. And but it's not just people obtaining this stuff through lawful warrants. It's these devices being turned against me by criminal organizations and or unlawful surveillance. And I don't like that. I don't want these things listening in on my home. That's my big beef. And I also don't want my life plundered for marketing purposes. I don't want that. I don't want that.
I totally appreciate that. And at the same time, I get that you're never going to have that unless you choose to shut off your internet connection, get rid of your computer, your iPad, your phone, your television.
Now, okay. You're making an excellent point. Clearly, it's not just Google and Amazon who are trying to plunder my life for their personal profit or their corporate profit. Mm-hmm. It's not just those companies, of course. I want to limit that as much as possible. I to your point, it's everywhere. It's pervasive. Credit card companies have been doing it for decades. They were just a lot less efficient than Facebook and Google.
Well, to be fair, they didn't have the technology Facebook and Google have.
Yeah, absolutely. And but I want to limit it. I don't like the way it's growing, and I don't like the way it's growing. The way people are so blasé about it, this whole thing where people think that they're using a service for free, but in reality they are the product that's being sold because they're using it, and that is I have a snooty, very elitist attitude about Amazon's good enough approach. The response, you're having to train the user how to use Alexa.
Here's an example of that and how ridiculous it is. If I want to control the lights that are in my hallway, there's two lights in my hallway, and I can have Alexa, is she listening? Turn them on or off. And what I found is that if I say turn on the hall lights, it turns on only one, and it's the first one that was named that has the word hall in it somewhere. Mm-hmm. So I had to create a special group in Alexa's smart home settings called hallway. So if I went to control both lights simultaneously, I have to use the word hallway.
Well, you would have had to do that with Siri too, wouldn't you?
No, Siri and totally gets it.
The Apple's home app. Oh, okay.
Yeah, Siri is much more adept.
Great. That's a fantastic example, and it's because Amazon, in its effort to be first to market, successful effort to be first to market, has this good enough approach where it's just responding to rote phrases. It's not responding through understanding, and Apple is building Siri to understand you and to actually eventually be able to have a conversation with you. It's a much longer play. It's a lot harder than what Amazon is doing. And it's a lot harder than what Google is doing. Although, to be fair, I have no doubt that Google is working on the same things that Apple is working on behind the scenes. Just Google wanted to be out in the marketplace now.
Right.
It's Google Home. But I've got this snooty elitist thing about Amazon's Alexa technology, but then I have my principled thing about not wanting products in my house that can be used against me by lawful or unlawful means. It just bugs me.
I was thinking what might be the right device for you, which doesn't exist, would be the smart home voice controller where everything is self-contained in your house. So like if it were Siri, you could say, "Yo Siri, turn on the lights," and all of that would be processed locally. Nothing goes out to a cloud server anywhere. But the problem is, if that's being handled locally, then it's still possible for that device to be taken as part of a search warrant. So that doesn't really help you.
Unless it's encrypted. And that's what Apple is doing with Siri data to date. And there's... this is actually so complex. Apple is keeping your user data, all the data that goes along with a proactive, for instance, proactive being the screen of information that you might want. Mm-hmm. By the way, one of the things I noticed that proactive is doing now is it is remembering where I parked without me saying anything. Without me saying, "Hey, remember where I park." So the other day, I couldn't find my car. I could not remember where I parked.
Did you say, "Yo Siri, where did I park"?
I did not say "Yo Siri," but yes, I said, "Show me where I parked," and wondering if it would work. And lo and behold, Siri knew where I parked, and that's useful, right? Google Now is still better than proactive. It's still more useful, with the trade-off, of course, that I have to give Google full access to my life to make Google Now worth anything. And Apple is doing all this stuff, and Apple has Tim Cook has stated the fact that they want to keep all of this data local about what Siri knows about us, which does definitely limit usefulness. I mean, there are so many trade-offs. You have trade-offs between privacy and usefulness, just like you have trade-offs between security and usefulness, security and convenience. And what I would like to see is Apple bring some kind of home automation hub that I can interact with in the same way that you're interacting with Alexa. And, you know, admittedly, I do interact with Alexa on a daily basis, but it's just not...
In a very dysfunctional way.
It's an extremely dysfunctional, Betty and childish way. Hashtag Brian. And but where Apple is actually trying to protect my privacy and my data and keeping this stuff local... like you said, and I think that Apple will enter this space, and I think that that's how Apple is going to do it. We're already seeing the roadmap with how Siri works. We're seeing the roadmap of how Apple would release any kind of home automation hub or add that functionality to, say, Apple TV. Mm-hmm. Although, really, it needs to not just be Apple TV. It also needs to be in, something that's dot-like so that you can have access to it in other rooms other than your living room.
Right.
Right. And the Alexa Dot or Amazon Dot. Is it the Alexa Dot or Amazon Dot?
Amazon Echo Dot. You have the Echo and Echo Dot.
Right.
And so they use Dot is Alexa as the interface.
Thank you. The Dot is the inexpensive, I think it's $40, device that essentially acts as a hub. And the Echo itself is the larger device that's more expensive.
Right. The big difference is that the bigger one has the
better
speakers, right? Yeah. And the small one has just a tiny speaker.
Right.
But you can add external speakers.
Right. And so one would assume that Apple, when Apple gets serious about being a hub for home automation, that Apple would add it to, say, Apple TV, but then also add it to some kind of small device that could be in other rooms, and then have all of these things talking with our iPhones, iPads, Macs, and maybe even our Apple Watches. Mm-hmm. But that it's doing, that it's keeping all of the data local to our devices rather than having it going to Apple's servers to protect our privacy. That's what I want.
All right. I'm in. I would love to have a device like that, and I could see where it could be set up as one device that's the main thing, and then you have the satellite microphone speaker units that you put in other rooms. So you don't have to have, like I do right now, I have two Echo Dots, one in the bedroom and one in the living room. I could just have the one device and then the microphones in different rooms.
All right. So I know that you have happily sold your soul to Amazon's data thing.
I really, really love my Echo Dot.
Right. Here's my question for you. If Apple released a Siri-based product that was protecting your privacy, would you replace your Echo-based, your Alexa-based system with that?
Sure.
Would you get rid of Alexa?
No, but I leave it muted most of the time.
But you don't use the ability. Do you use the ability to order from Amazon through Alexa?
Not yet. And only because I've been trying to figure out what it is that I want to set up so that I can just order it all the time. So I've been watching my purchase habits, and now I know what I'm going to set up. So yes, I'm going to use it. I just haven't yet.
Alexa, order me 1,000 gallons of milk. Wait, are we on speaker?
I am so glad that I have that feature turned off right now. Look, here's a truckload of death for Jeff.
Really, it's death for everybody else. Once Jeff drinks it. Anyway, as fish would say, bygones.
But someone out there right now is really pissed off at you.
Yeah, someone's really, really, really mad at me. You might want to cancel that order.
Or send Brian the bill.
Yeah, don't do that. Definitely don't do that. But you don't use that, right?
Not yet.
I mean, you're only using it for home automation.
Correct.
Right. So you would bring in a Siri-based system, but you wouldn't replace, but you would keep Alexa in place.
Right. So what I would do is actually, it depends on how Apple has their system set up. It might be necessary for me to keep Alexa, because if I want to have other people voice controlling my system and I don't want to have to invite them, like what I have to do right now with HomeKit, just some way that people could tell lights to turn on and off, then yeah, I would keep the Echo set up for that. And then for shopping. But if I could do all the voice control without having to touch my iPhone or Apple Watch through a Siri-based device, absolutely.
You'd turn Alexa off the
pipe. I would just quit using
Alexa. Given the information that we have today, mind you.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, this could change depending on what Apple actually ends up doing. Right. But I think Apple is doing it. I strongly believe that Apple is planning this and is going to do this. And it's just a matter of when. And I also hope that it doesn't take too long. But again, what Apple's approach is harder than Amazon's approach.
Yes. Apple's approach is definitely harder, but the payoff is so much better, because the things that I do with Siri on my iPhone right now, when I'm willing to shout across the room and hope that my iPhone catches it correctly, is so much more robust than what I'm doing with Alexa.
Yeah. Right. And we won't have to, you know, we will hopefully laugh at the fact that we tolerated having to train ourselves to work with Alexa. Hopefully we'll laugh. Hopefully Apple is going to bring something to market where we laugh at that idea. That's what I'm hoping.
Me too.
All right. Listen, we are over time. We are over time. We are over time. So thanks to Bob for joining us to promote Working Smarter for Mac Users, which you can find at workingsmarterformacusers.com. Thanks to Blue Apron for sponsoring us at blueapron.com/ACM. Get three of your first meals on your first order. Three meals on your first order for free with free shipping at blueapron.com/ACM. And thank you.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, write us at ACM at macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Yeah, our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CacheFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that is all for this week.
Stay subscribed. I don't know where that came from.
I don't either, but we will see you theoretically online at the Mac Observer.